Thanks for joining us. I'm Frank Sesno, host of Planet Forward and professor at the George Washington University, sitting in for Diane today, who is visiting Interlochen Public Radio. We'll be back tomorrow with you. A federal court decision, a big one, favoring Comcast over the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, has underscored the uncertainty of who controls the Internet. Critics of the ruling fear that the power that big Internet service providers like Comcast could have over web content and distribution could be changing now. Supporters say it's a narrow decision. There's nothing to fear. Well, joining me in the studio to talk about the implications of the decision and curtailing the FCC's power to regulate Internet providers is Ben Scott of Free Press, Amy Schatz of The Wall Street Journal, and Kyle McSclaro of the National Cable and Telecommunications Association. Good day to all of you.
Morning.
And we are on the net, even as we're talking on radio here, so we're living everywhere. Amy, be the reporter for us here, and winnow this down and tell us what this decision was all about and how it affects this thing called the web that so many Americans go to every day and increasingly depend upon.
Basically, what the court did on Tuesday was say that the federal government hasn't necessarily made the case that they can police the Internet, and they haven't necessarily made the case that they can police Internet providers, which means that for consumers, for your listeners at home, it's not clear now that if a Comcast or a Time Warner or an AT&T decided to block your access to Amazon or to eBay, that they couldn't do it. Because right now, there was some thought that if they tried to do that, that would be a bad thing, and the federal government could come and say, no, 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 don't do that. Now it's just not clear if anybody could come in and say, that's not cool, you shouldn't be doing that.
In other words, I mean, if we were to come up with a bad analogy, I like bad analogies, but is this a little bit like the supermarket saying, we're only going to sell our product or we'll put our product at the front of the store, and there's nothing anybody can do about it?
A little bit like that, right. So that one product is at eye level, the other product is way at the bottom of the shelf where you can't see it, and it would prevent or at least make it harder for consumers to sort of reach competitors' products.
Ben, how would this translate out if we took this to its logical conclusion in terms of what people would see and how their experience online would differ from what it is now?
Well, if the companies that control the wires coming into your house, the cable and phone companies, control all the content on the Internet, and there's nothing the federal government can do to protect consumers. And what will happen is people will pursue their financial interests. It doesn't make cable and phone companies evil. It makes them responsible to their shareholders, and they will do what makes them the most money. If that means favoring their own content by steering consumers away from one website or another, they'll probably find ways to make that happen.
So, for example, a Time Warner, which might own that cable coming into my house and the modem and my Internet experience as a result, could say, maybe Netflix shouldn't be so easy to get at or so quick as a download. They could actually make distinctions between themselves and competitors?
They absolutely could. And let's take the example of Comcast, because, of course, they're right in the middle of trying to buy NBC Universal, which is a big Hollywood studio and, of course, a broadcast network. If that merger is successful, they will own a huge amount of content that is transmitted over the Internet on all kinds of different websites, and they'll have a clear financial incentive to steer consumers towards NBC content. And, you know, that's a problem from my perspective as a consumer advocate, because up to now, the Internet is purely a consumer-driven medium. Unlike any medium that's come before it, there's no gatekeeper, there's no control point. Once you log on, you are the master of the universe, and that's what makes it so great.
Kyle, speaking for the industry here, should a Time Warner or a Comcast, if they're buying, this is business after all, should they not have the ability to advantage their own product? I mean, isn't that one of the benefits of doing these business deals?
Well, I think often that is the case. And in many instances, I think the answer would be yes, except in this instance, our industry, every industry, not just the cable industry, but telephone providers, wireless providers have said they won't. And there's a practical reason why. We're in the business of providing Internet access. Mm-hmm. The business model, and every consumer who's out there listening to this can test the proposition, our business model is to allow you to do anything you want, go wherever you want, download any application you want, and we're in the business of providing you enough bandwidth to enable that experience. It would be a curious business model where we actually started altering the consumer experience, whether it's favoring our own content over another, if they can't do what they want to do, they're going to go to another provider who can offer.
Well, if they have that choice.
They always will. They really will. I mean, there was a day when I think it was largely debatable, but in America today, you're almost always going to have at least a cable and telephone internet access provider. In a very short order, you're going to have a lot of wireless providers.
Amy, this is why it's called net neutrality, that the providers, at least presumably and up until now, have been neutral in the content that they are allowing to come through their pipeline, the speeds with which that all travels through the pipeline, and the access that people at home or in their offices or on their handhelds have to that.
Right. I mean, net neutrality doesn't mean anything more than the idea that all internet traffic should be treated equally, that no one gets preferential treatment, that everything gets there at the same time as fast. You know, there's no special priority lanes or there's nothing special about it. Everything gets there as fast as they can get it there.
So explain this federal appeals court decision, this ruling, and what it means to that premise.
So basically the court, it gets kind of wonky. So the court basically said when the Federal Communications Commission dinged Comcast for slowing or blocking some of its users' efforts to download some really large files via this service called BitTorrent, which basically allows you to send files back and forth. They were slowing this traffic, and people found out about it, and they complained. And the FCC said, this isn't right. You violated our principles, our net neutrality principles, and you shouldn't be able to do this anymore. And Comcast basically said, well, you know, great to have principles, but this isn't really enforceable. And so basically they were just challenging it on some administrative grounds. So, you know, the court basically said the FCC didn't make their case. They didn't say the FCC wouldn't ever have authority to be the policeman, but right now they don't.
Ben, why is this being viewed as a setback for the FCC?
Well, it's a setback because it goes way beyond this issue of network neutrality. I mean, if you step back and you think about what does the Federal Communications Commission do, I mean, they have authority over protecting consumers on every media platform, whether it's broadcasting or cable or the internet. And increasingly, as our high-speed internet networks, our broadband networks become the fundamental infrastructure of our information society, the FCC is looking at what do they need to do to protect consumers, to build the infrastructure, to make sure everybody has access to it at affordable prices. They have a legal theory that they use to apply rules and regulations to the wires that come in and out of your home. And network neutrality was one of those rules. And when Comcast challenged this in court, they didn't challenge the facts of the case. They didn't challenge whether they were guilty of blocking content on the internet. They challenged the FCC's legal authority. And the court not only said, you don't have the right to do net neutrality, the court took a broad swipe at the entire structure of the legal authority, which is going to force the FCC to switch gears and choose a different legal path in order to adhere to its responsibilities as the regulator of communications networks.
And you consider this a bad thing, a bad development?
It's as if I got a parking ticket outside the radio studio and I sued the D.C. city government and I said, not only do you not have the right to give me a parking ticket, you don't have the right to have any traffic rules at all. And the courts agreed with me. I mean, it's really an astonishing...
Well, that's actually kind of appealing there. Be careful where you go with that. So you see this as a major setback in the area of government regulation and the oversight that's taking place in this new frontier.
It is, but it's temporary because they can't have a situation where they have no ability to protect consumers on the internet at all. It's going to require a change of pace.
Kyle, how does the industry see it?
So it's important to understand today, all the consumer protection laws and rules that have existed are still in place, whether it's at the FCC or at the FTC. All the privacy protections at the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, and the FCC are still in place. All the antitrust, anti-competitive rules and statutes that protect against anti-competitive conduct are still in place. They may be in other agencies. So all the rules that people think about in terms of consumer protection and guarding against anti-competitive conduct were in place yesterday. They're still in place today.
So you don't think the consumer is any more exposed, and you don't think the regulatory regime is in any way diluted?
No, I think there's an important debate, which Ben, you know, started down the road on, which we should get to, about what the implications are for the regulatory regime. But the question before the FCC in this case was a very narrow one. And I'll probably mangle Ben's analogy, but on the parking ticket, the way I look at it, this is as if you had parked and there actually was no sign telling you you couldn't park. The case was about the fact that the FCC imposed a penalty of sorts, mainly reputational, a penalty on a particular provider when they had no rule in place. The whole case here was about whether or not there was even a rule and whether or not there was statutory authority.
So you say this is a minor point. This is about whether there was a sign out on the curb and not at some. You're saying don't overconclude.
It's important in terms of its implications, but we are not actually arguing. In other words, our industry, as I said before, does not disagree that people should not block access. They should not curtail the consumer experience. That's the business we're in.
So, Amy, we have one person saying, big setback, I'm worried. Somebody else saying, it's just that the sign wasn't out there. Put a sign out there and we'll be better or whatever. What do you make of this? Is this a setback? Is this significant?
It's a setback. And this is another example of how net neutrality debates have been going for the last 5 years in D.C. because we've had variations of this same argument for the last 5 years. I think one of the problems that the industry has is that, when they say, oh, this isn't going to prompt anyone to not be able to get to Amazon, or we're not going to block any sites. The problem is that I'm not sure that a lot of consumers believe them on that, because they maybe haven't necessarily had great customer service from some of these companies in the past, and so there may not be a lot of trust there. And if the ultimate issue here is really, does anybody have the authority to stop bad behavior if it happens, or are you just going to rely on the good faith of companies to do the right thing?
Well, what's the answer for that right now?
Right now, it's really not clear that anybody has authority.
So you have to rely on the good faith of companies, which Kyle is saying was going to be there because that's what the companies are there to do. That's their business.
Well, the other issue, too. Right.
So think about this. The internet broadband has been around for over a decade. You've got trillions of transactions, and there are precisely two episodes that anybody can point to in all of that as being bad acts.
Net neutrality. How neutral is it really? You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We'll be back with more after a short break. You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. I'm Frank Sesno, sitting in for Diane today. How neutral is your net experience? We're talking today about net neutrality, recent court decision limiting the FCC's ability to regulate, or at least in the perception of many, what's happening on the web and how much access people are going to get, or providers are going to allow to some of the high-speed activity that's going on there. We're talking with Ben Scott. He's the policy director for Free Press. That's a national organization that advocates for media reform. Amy Schatz, she's a reporter for The Wall Street Journal and covers FCC and technology policy and does it incredibly well. And Kyle McSclaro, who is president and CEO of the National Cable and Telecommunications Association. We've gotten several emails, guys, and I'd like to drop a few of them on you and have you pick up on some of these. Here's something from Elizabeth, who sends this email to us from New Hampshire. Comcast is my internet provider. When I look something up on the internet, I place my cursor on Google, and halfway through typing my request, the cursor jumps down to the Comcast search engine. I've complained to Comcast, as that was not my choice, but of course nothing has been done. Even though it's inconvenient, I go back to Google and start all over again. What I want to know is, how does Comcast benefit from me using their search engine over Google? Amy?
Basically, Comcast is going to have ads on that page. And so if you're on that page, there's going to be eyeballs on those ads. And so they can make money that way. And they're hoping that if you search using their site, you're going to click through and they'll make more money from the ads.
Ben, here's one I'd like to address to you. This is from Nicole in Dallas. I've not heard anyone discuss the implications of net access in terms of pricing. If they can block access to certain sites because of bandwidth or promote sites in which they have an interest, to me it's only a small step from there to an internet provider coming up with tiered plans for the internet the same way they do with cable TV. This expensive plan has YouTube, Facebook, NPR, BitTorrent, and this cheaper plan doesn't allow any large audio or video files to be enabled. This person writes, I don't believe for a minute the providers are not itching to do this. What do you make of that?
That is a really important question. It is sort of tangential to, next to the net neutrality debate, is how do we price internet access? Historically, you pay $15, you get X amount of speed. Whatever you do, it's traveling at X speed. You pay twice that, you get Y speed, a little bit faster, but everything you do is at that speed. The question is, you know, will you have to pay to get access to particular sites? Will certain things cost more? Will you have to pay for every email, for every click, for every download? That's a live debate going on right now, and I think it's really going to be about whether consumers will put up with that and whether the companies decide that's in their long-term interest. So I personally hope we don't go down that road, but it's by no means illegal, and even if the net neutrality debate were to come out in a completely different way, it wouldn't impact the billing
system. Kyle, what do you make of that? Because this is where the rubber meets the road for many consumers, yeah. Right? The price, and they're certainly drawing on their cable experience. Okay, yeah. You can have your basic cable service for $3.95 a month and get one channel, and then there are tiers and tiers and tiers. Could that happen online?
Yeah, I agree. It's an important question, and it actually goes right to the heart of the so-called net neutrality debate. I mean, fundamentally, this debate is really between a bunch of companies. On one side, you have internet access providers who have invested hundreds of billions of dollars putting fiber optics into the ground, very expensive capital investments. On the other side, you've got companies like Google and applications provider on the web, who are also themselves behemoths. The argument in terms of net neutrality by Google and others is that somebody has to pay for the infrastructure upgrade. It ought to be the consumers, right? The consumers are the ones paying the providers. So visit all the costs of the upgrades, the expansion, the deployment of broadband on the consumers. And there are others who say, well, you know what? If Google has the ability to pay for specialized services or whatnot, they ought to be part of this transaction. But the net neutrality proponents say, nope, let's cut it off. The consumer should pay for everything. Well, if that's true, and there is going to be still in the future, foreseeable future, a lot of upgrades, a lot of expensive capital outlay, how do you do that with consumers? Do you distinguish between my mom, who uses her internet service for just email on a minimal basis, from the kid next door, maybe my kid, who's downloading movies 24/7 and consuming enormous amount of bandwidth? There are a lot of people who say that's a fair way to distinguish between a heavy user of the internet from a more moderate user.
Amy, I come back to the question, and Ben and everybody join in here. Why isn't this fair? You use more, you pay more. You have higher speeds, you pay more. You own the company, you charge differently. I mean, the idea that there's something special about the web, that it should be wide open and free in a sense, is unlike any other business proposition that we're really talking about, that we would draw from. You use more electricity, you pay more.
Right, and there's nothing, and as Ben said, there's nothing that would stop companies from doing that. It just comes down to what people are used to. It's like the baggage fees that Spirit Airlines just recently tried to put into place.
Oh, that was popular.
They're going to charge you to even just take a bag on the plane and you shove it in the overhead. I mean, that is really unpopular.
Okay, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. If you're offended by that and you can find somebody else flying at roughly the same time and you're prepared to pay, going to the same place, you can take another airline. But here's an email from Ryan in Gainesville, Florida, who says most consumers do not have a choice in broadband due to local monopolies. Is he right?
Well, that's the problem, because really, as Kyle said, you may have two providers in your area. You may have Comcast and you may have Verizon, but really the pricing on those plans are pretty similar, and people really just aren't that happy with the service they can get right now.
I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation. You can call in with a question to our panel on the issue of net neutrality and the direction and pricing and regulatory regime that oversees your web experience at 1-800-433-8850. The number again is 1-800-433-8850, or you can email us at drshow@wamu.org.
Sure, go ahead. There's a point that both Ben and Amy have made that I need to correct. I am well aware of issues with cable service, right? This is my job. Broadband is different. And it's not just surveys we've done, which I know no one will trust.
We being the industry.
We being the industry. But independent surveys have shown consistently the broadband service in America is one of the most wildly popular services. People are crazy about it. They don't think they're getting gouged. They know the reality is they're getting faster speeds. In fact, over the last 5 or 6 years, we've been doubling and trebling the speeds of the downloads and not even moving the price of the product. And this is what has enabled the Googles, the YouTubes, all these new web applications to explode on the scene because we're providing a lot more capacity. The consumer experience is off the charts. And the numbers for how consumers love broadband compared to most services in America are off the charts. So it's just not true to say that people are critical of it. There are people in D.C. who are critical of it, but the consumer at large is actually very happy.
You in line with that, Ben?
Well, I mean, it's all about how you ask a question to someone. You know, are you happy with what you have? Well, that depends on what you're going to offer me next. And if you look at the broadband networks that we have in the United States versus the networks that they have in the world's leading broadband nations in Europe and in Asia, we are considerably behind. The Congress has ordered the FCC to fix that problem. They created this broad national broadband plan to try to get at this question.
What do you mean we're considerably behind?
Most American consumers pay a lot more for a lot less broadband speed than their counterparts in Paris or London.
It's faster and cheaper there.
That's right, faster and cheaper. And that's a significant problem because that translates into not only jobs and economic growth that aren't going to the U.S., but that's also about social opportunity and political opportunity. Increasingly, the Internet is becoming an essential part of everybody's life. I strongly disagree that the network neutrality debate is about Google versus Comcast. As a consumer advocate, I feel like Google is going to take care of themselves. What I'm worried about is the 60% of the content or more on the Internet that's non-commercial. That's people expressing their viewpoints on their websites. That's community groups getting together to put a video up of the kids' high school play on the Internet. I want to make sure that non-commercial content has the same rights and advantages as commercial content. It's not a pay-for-play system. That's what's different about the Internet. If you look at all other previous media systems, they were all pay-per-play. They all had gatekeepers. It was all about the money. The Internet is not that way, and I think that is something worth preserving.
The Internet is something else, and this gets into something that's been raised with respect to this FCC decision. The Internet is also access. It's access to opportunity, to education. It's why the digital divide is considered to be such a problem and why some communities are investing public money to bring themselves up to speed. The FCC has said that this ruling could hamper key portions of a national broadband plan, which is to bring high-speed connections to rural and low-income areas. Now, that takes this discussion to an entirely different plane, Amy, not just what the consumer is going to pay or how fast they're going to get, but whether communities are going to get wired up in the way that would create opportunity across the board for underserved populations, for example. Legitimate concern with this ruling?
It's a very legitimate concern, and it's one that the FCC itself raised yesterday. Recently, the agency released a plan. It was a national broadband plan. It was basically a blueprint for how they're going to get high-speed, affordable access to all Americans because there's something like, 20 million households that don't have it right now, and they're mostly in rural areas where it's just really expensive to offer service. And so the FCC came up with a plan for using a federal subsidy program that they run to use on broadband instead of phone.
And so how does this ruling affect that?
Well, they don't really necessarily, under the law that Congress set forth, they don't necessarily have the authority to use it on broadband because it was set up for the phone service. And so they were going to try to use some of the laws that were sort of called into question by the court on Tuesday to try to sort of shift the money that way. And so it's not entirely clear now that they can do that.
Comic Sclero, you have sort of a furrowed brow.
I was just curious because actually with the FCC, the general counsel yesterday said in commenting on this decision was that the decision actually had next to no effect on their ability to implement the broadband plan. This one issue that Amy was just talking about, the Universal Service Fund, is an issue where they do, I think, have to think through what authorities they have. Interestingly, we are actually very supportive of the direction they're going on that. And I actually wrote a letter laying out the legal case for how they could do this without engaging a whole lot of regulation of the Internet. So I think they actually have ample authority to achieve their objectives, and I'm very supportive, and I think they're on the right path. But just to be clear, the FCC itself, and I agree with this, has said the Comcast case is not going to affect their ability to roll out the broadband plan. Remember, it's a report to Congress. Congress asked for recommendations. They've given them recommendations. Some of them would require legislation. Others will require rulemakings, and they'll be in a normal process.
Is this on track?
I don't see how you read the FCC's statement that way. That their top lawyer, who argued the Comcast case and frankly got beat up pretty well by the judges and lost the case, he said, look, this goes way beyond network neutrality, and we're very worried that the current legal structure that we were planning to implement the broadband plan with, including bringing access to rural Americans, including protecting consumer privacy, including truth in billing rules and the like, all of those things under their current regulatory regime are in question. He said, we have plenty of regulatory authority, but we're going to have to move into a different system, a system that is hotly opposed by cable and telephone companies. And so it's going to be a big political battle to make sure the FCC can do its job and do right by the American people.
I'm Frank Sesno, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We're talking about net neutrality and the future of this thing we call the web. If you'd like to join us, call us at 1-800-433-8850. You can send us an email at drshow@wamu.org. We're talking with Ben Scott. He's the policy director of Free Press, which is a national organization that advocates for media reform, a consumer advocacy organization. Amy Schatz, reporter with the Wall Street Journal, who covers technology policy and the FCC, which falls into that, of course. And Kyle McSclaro, who's speaking on behalf of the industry. He's president and CEO of the National Cable and Telecommunications Association. Let me go to the phone now and take a call from Jason, who's calling in from Miami, Florida. Hi, Jason. Thanks for calling, and thanks for waiting patiently for us.
Hi. I was just calling in because my family was recently considering switching to Comcast. And we decided not to specifically because of this ruling. And our line of thinking is if Comcast wants to slow down BitTorrent, what's to stop them from slowing down something else? And right now we have AT&T, but we're also worried that AT&T is going to go ahead and do the same thing, and we won't have any options if we want to have free access to everything.
Very interesting point. So this decision has actually influenced some behavior in rather specific ways. Ben, you're the consumer advocate here. What do you think? What's your response?
He's absolutely right to be worried. And this ruling affects not just Comcast, it affects every internet service provider, including AT&T. And as it stands right now, the FCC's ability to stop either AT&T or Comcast from blocking websites or slowing down websites, it's not there. They can't do it right now. They're going to have to take on a different regulatory system in order to protect this guy in Miami and his family and their access to the internet.
Comics Claro, is he absolutely right to be worried?
No. He's not. And I have a lot of respect for Ben, but I always love how he's described as a consumer advocate. Our industry spends 24 hours a day worrying about how to take care of customers and keeping them happy.
Charge them for that, though.
Yeah, but you know what? You know, it is evidenced by the caller, you know, for whatever reasons, they can make their own decisions, which I think is proof of that. It's important, actually, to go back to the Comcast case, because it's actually a lesson of why regulatory overreach is not warranted here. This is a very technical issue that was at issue. This wasn't a quick case of blocking websites or anything. This was an engineering decision made at one company about how to handle the fact that some networks are being swamped by so-called peer-to-peer traffic, in this case the BitTorrent. When the issue was raised, before the FCC did anything, Comcast itself took a look at how they did this, and they themselves worked out an agreement with BitTorrent in this case, and unilaterally, on their own, said, you know what, there's a better way to do it. We'll switch to another system, which I think most people actually think is a pretty good way of managing the traffic flows. All before the FCC then decided to just, you know, pour salt in the wound and issue an order declaring them a bad actor.
So you're saying they were fixing it on their own.
Sunlight is the best disinfectant. And in this case, a company who had it called to his attention decided on its own, you know what, we can do it a better way. I think that's a better way of doing it than a huge, you know, regulatory regime.
And you're telling our caller who is wondering about whether Comcast is going to block and...
They're not going to do that, and I would...
Go ahead and sign up.
Well, first of all, of course I'm going to say sign up, but I would do what any consumer does, judge it by the package and price.
Well, let me fill in a little bit of the history that Kyle skipped over, which is that when consumers complained about Comcast blocking access to web services, and the FCC said, we're opening an investigation, for the first 6 months of that investigation, Comcast denied that they were doing this. They just flatly lied to the FCC over and over and over again. And only after it became painfully clear to everybody watching that they were in fact doing what the complaint alleged, they said, okay, you got us, we are doing that, and we're going to change it, and we're going to work with these companies, and we'll figure out a solution. And the solution they came up with was fine, but it's hard for me to believe that absent a law hanging over their heads, getting ready to sanction them, they would have taken an action to fix that problem.
Amy, very quickly, an email from Jim. Could this decision be compared with the phone company screening which calls a subscriber receives?
It could be similar. I mean, this is something that you could look at and say, perhaps they could decide who you can send emails to or block something. I mean, Kyle, I think Kyle's kind of right in a way that it doesn't make an enormous amount of business sense for them to start doing those sorts of things. But, you know, there's nothing that...
But what we're hearing from these emails and what we're hearing on the phones, and we'll get back to them in just a moment, is a great deal of suspicion, nervousness about it.
Right. People don't have a lot of faith in some of these companies because they've had bad customer service experiences in the past where they've waited at home for hours for installers to show up, or their service goes down and they don't get, you know, it doesn't go up for a few days. I mean, there are a lot of suspicion out there.
All right. Well, we're going to talk more about net neutrality, take more calls, and get more from our panel on the future of your Internet coming up on the Diane Rehm Show, Your Calls and Questions. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. By Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing, constantcontact.com. And from Ann and John Herman, supporting City Year and the young adults who dedicate a year of their lives to community service and leadership development, cityyear.org. This is NPR.
A new novel from the best-selling author of Atonement, the story of a Nobel Prize-winning physicist whose greed and ambition threatened to ruin his personal life, but whose work could save the world from environmental disaster. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. I'm Frank Sesno, sitting in for Diane today. We are talking about net neutrality, recent court decision affecting the FCC and its regulatory role, perhaps, over what is being done, the case at hand, Comcast. And we are talking with Ben Scott. He's the policy director of Free Press, a national organization that advocates for media reform. Kyle McSclaro, he's the head of the National Cable and Telecommunications Association. And our referee and translator is Amy Schatz. She's a reporter with the Wall Street Journal. So, Amy, it's all riding on you here.
Okay? I don't take sides.
That's exactly what I mean. Here's an email we just got before we go back to the phones. Peter from Tarrytown, New York writes, I don't have a strong feeling against Internet providers favoring their products. I'm smart enough to find what I want. It's a business. They're entitled to promote them. Where I get concerned, he writes, is if they developed a political, social, or religious agenda and restrict opposing opinions. Is there any danger of that, Amy?
Well, there have been cases in the past where, and Ben can probably talk to this a little bit more than I can, but where some cell phone providers have, I think, blocked some short codes for some abortion protesters or something. So there is some concern about that. But the public backlash on those sorts of things is so strong that it's often prevented some companies from doing that sort of thing.
Ben?
Well, I mean, I think political censorship is a hot-button issue, and rightly so, and people need to keep it in the back of their minds. I don't think it's fair to say that these companies are lining up to censor people's political speech. I don't think that's in their mind. I think this is more about money than it is about politics, and that it's only fair to say that. I do think, though, that it's important to point out that as a technical matter, when you speed up one website, it's not just you speed it up and everybody else goes the same speed. It's a zero-sum game on the Internet. When one thing gets speeded up, one website speeded up, one has to be slowed down. So if you say, okay, we're going to speed up everybody with the money to pay, not only do they go faster, everybody else goes slower. So my earlier point that I'm looking out for all the non-commercial content on the Internet, all of the just regular people who use the Internet to communicate with their family or their friends or just to post their thoughts on the web, you know, those websites are all going to get slowed down if we move to a system where it's pay for play and there's a huge difference in the speeds of those who can pay and those who can't.
Back to the phones, and Kevin, who's calling in from Oklahoma. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Frank. Thanks for taking my call.
Great to hear you.
Yeah. I got a question. My provider here in Northeast Oklahoma blocks a lot of those sites, BitTorrents, because a lot of it is illegal content, and they tell me that they get a lot of pressure from, you know, music companies, movie companies, to shut this stuff down. And I'm wondering how much of that is affecting the fact that Comcast has done some of this, and how is this effect going to affect it in the future as far as ISP providers not being able to provide it just because of the pressure that they're getting from the other side?
Great question, Kevin. Thanks very much. Kyle, you want to address that?
Yeah, I actually think it falls nicely from the point that Ben just made, because it's ironic. Ben, you know, earlier said he wasn't shilling for Google, but his focus, you'll notice, is on the web applications, how much they're charged. And he made a very cogent and, I thought, thoughtful description of the concerns about whether or not if you speed up one person, you slow down somebody else. That is exactly what was happening in the Comcast case. Comcast was trying as best they can, and they've now improved it, to figure out how to avoid with if one person is using all the capacity that they're affecting everybody else in the neighborhood by slowing down their service. And they were figuring out what's the fairest way to make sure every consumer in that neighborhood gets a good experience. Related to that is the fact that what they were dealing with is this peer-to-peer traffic, which is, you know, I'm not going to get technical here, and I'm not even sure I fully understand it, to be honest, but basically peer-to-peer traffic can, if it's overused, swamp a network, and it really will affect everybody in the neighborhood if somebody is using it constantly. A lot of it, not all of it, a lot of it is pirated material. So there is a law in place that places some obligations when ISPs are notified by content providers of infringing or pirated material to send notices to their customers saying, look, we've gotten this notice from, you know, a content company. They say that you're infringing it. Please knock it off. And usually there's a series of letters, you know, increasingly more intense. And in most cases, what you find is that people didn't understand what they were doing. They didn't know about it, or it was, you know, their kid again, you know, and they go deal
but
with it.
We expect
themselves.
The company to do something. We expect the ISP, the provider,
and,
to do
and,
something.
And to be honest, it's awkward for Internet service providers. They, you know, I think everybody and all of us should be and have a shared interest in fighting pirated material, because the truth is it's a deadweight economic loss to our economy.
I know you agree with that, Ben.
I certainly do, and I want to point out that network neutrality rules do not protect illegal content.
That's true.
Copyright infringement and spam and viruses and attacks on consumers, those are not protected under the rules and never will be. And it is a significant problem. How do we protect copyright on the Internet? But, you know, what Comcast was doing in the first instance was a blunt instrument. They're saying, here's a service that may be enabling copyright infringement, although that wasn't the reason they were doing it. They blocked everything. That what they're doing now is much more targeted and much more fair, and that's sort of what we're using the rules to move toward.
Let's go back to the phones, and John, who's calling in from Leesburg, Virginia. And John, I understand you're an Internet engineer, so you're going to help us understand this whole thing.
I'll try to. one of the couple of the points that I was going to make, you guys just made, and that's really what is fair and equal access. And I absolutely agree that Comcast was doing their best to level the playing field of the people that were really, say 5% of their subscriber base were consuming 80% of the network resources. I usually joke that that I've been working as an internet engineer shortly before Al Gore invented it. And I've been on both sides. I currently work for one of the very large data center companies where the Googles and the Yahoos and the eBays live. I've also, as recently as a year ago, been on the other side, not exactly the Comcast side, but the small rural ISP provider that's out there serving the underserved markets. And in those environments, the user that's out there doing the BitTorrent, as well as the movie downloads that get called out, those folks are not only hurting the communities that they're in, the small communities, it's also a burden for that small provider that's out there serving that market, that they don't have a large staff of people to respond to the movie takedown notices, as well as the extra money to buy the capacity that is required to serve the BitTorrent user, as well as let the person go to their email or the occasional YouTube.
So what is your bottom line in this discussion and in this court decision and where the FCC now stands?
I actually think it's a good thing that the FCC has no business regulating the internet. As an engineer trying to serve my customer base, whether it's a consumer or whether it is a Google-type entity, let the market do what it knows best, which is to serve their customer. If the customer's not happy, whether it's a consumer or a large business, you're going to hear about it, and business practice will take care of it.
Okay, thanks very much. Kyle, response?
Well, I think I guess the point here is, just to be clear, I don't actually have a – we share the vision that Ben outlined, right? We don't want an internet that isn't free and open. We want people to go and access any application or website and do anything they want. That is a great vision. We support it. The debate here is over whether or not, as the caller just identified, the marketplace can take care of it or if you need government regulation.
And your position is we don't need government regulation, the marketplace can take care of it?
And it's not just philosophical. It's that there is literally, with very few instances, no evidence – of a requirement that the government needs to intervene.
No evidence that the government needs to intervene.
Well, except for the CEOs of all the major cable and telephone companies who say, we want to change the way the internet works and we want to control content, we want to speed some content up, we want to slow some content down, we want to put ourselves between consumers and the content they're finding and change the business model. Now, everybody would agree that the free market is the best way to allocate goods and services in our economy when there is sufficient competition to have a free market that works. In the broadband market, where you have only one or two wires into your home, that is not a competitive market. So if you remove all regulatory oversight and you have no consumer protection, you haven't created competition. You've just given the farm to the one or two guys who control that market.
Empowering monopolies is what he's saying, Kyle.
I love the idea that you don't have competition when you have two companies or two industries that are going toe-to-toe every single day, beating their brains out. We're all looking at the ads on TV and in print.
Do you consider two companies competition?
I think the more the merrier.
As a consumer, if I only have two companies, you call that competition?
I do.
I don't really have many choices.
And you know what? I think if you asked anybody, if two guys were in a boxing ring, is that competition? Everybody would say, yeah. You could have three, you could have four, and the more the merrier, and that's great. But realistically, what the test of competition is whether or not they each, an industry or the two companies, and of course they're going to be more than that, as we were talking about with wireless broadband, whether or not they have every incentive to maximize their offerings to the consumers at the lowest possible price.
Kyle,
and the truth is, they do.
Comics Claro, people are worried, for example, looking at the airline industry, that we may go down to three gigantic carriers, and they say that would not be competition. If you look at the supermarkets, you've got, five, six stores and specialty stores you can go to. That's competition. Having two big companies that can bring a wire or a satellite signal into your home, most people don't consider that competition. That's pretty limited stuff.
Well, I hear that all the time, and all I can say is the test is how they operate vis-a-vis each other. How do they compete with each other? And the way they act is if they're in a competitive marketplace fighting tooth and nail for the customer. And just to go back to the earlier point, we all need to understand, and I think the FCC deserves a lot of credit here, there's going to be a new, I mean, whether it's a third pipe or a fourth or whatever, there's going to be a new wireless broadband offering across this nation in very short order. It's already starting to deploy today, and you're going to have a lot more competition than even today.
To the phones, Eric in North Carolina. Hi, Eric. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. I feel like there's something that's missing the point on the discussion, and that is that tiered pricing for the Internet already exists. If I pay more, I get more. That's not going to change under net neutrality. I am both a provider in my business, and I'm also a consumer. And on both ends of that pipe, I'm paying for my bandwidth. And what this net neutrality does, it prevents my competitor, who may have more political access, more access to, say, Comcast ear, from closing down my business or slowing down my business for preference to, say, QVC, a large company who's able to pull some strings or maybe is related to somebody and who's actually my competitor and who actually does pull strings. And so what I see with net neutrality is it's keeping small businesses competitive. It's keeping consumers being allowed to access what they want when they want.
Okay, let's get Amy's response from that. From Wall Street Journal, you're all about business.
Right. The caller's absolutely right. Then on the consumer side, already you have tiered levels of pricing. As Ben mentioned earlier, you know, you can spend $30 a month and get a certain amount of speed, and you can spend $50 a month and get a different speed. What this whole debate is really about is on the other side for businesses, and are they going to have to pay more to get a preferential lane to your house so that their service can get there as fast as someone else's service? So does Google have to pay more to get to your house via Comcast so that Microsoft's Bing service won't work as well? That's the sort of thing that they're talking about, and that's why those companies are so concerned about this.
I'm Frank Sesno, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. If you would like to join us in our final minutes here, give us a call at 1-800-433-8850. Send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. Back to the phones here, and Brennan from Huntsville, Alabama. Hi, Brennan.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Go ahead with your question, please.
Yeah, just one thing. I've been listening to the show. One thing that hasn't been mentioned is the fact that there are a lot of small businesses out there that use the Internet as their virtual storefront. It's the only medium that they have to connect with their customers. And if companies start charging additional amounts for that transaction, for that medium, that's analogous to someone charging me for the air I use to talk to somebody when they come into my physical storefront. And I just think that's wrong.
So you're worried about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm a small business owner. I use the Internet as my only interface with my customers. I don't have a brick-and-mortar store. I don't need one. And if I get charged for the amount of Internet usage that I have, that's like someone charging me to use air to talk to someone when they walk into my brick-and-mortar store if I was in that sort of business mode.
Okay, Brent. Ben, respond to Brennan there for us.
Well, I think the caller from North Carolina and Brennan from Alabama, they should be the guests on your show. They've done a better job than I have of explaining why network neutrality is so important.
That's why we have telephone neutrality here, so they can call in.
And what they're describing is exactly right. Everybody already pays for Internet access. You pay to consume the Internet. You pay to upload content, whether you're a small business, whether you're Amazon or Google. The question of network neutrality is whether there can be discriminatory pricing, whether the network, the owner of the physical wires, can stand between the consumer and the producer of information and charge a discriminatory rate, one producer against another. And that's the fundamental question of fairness that network neutrality is trying to protect.
Well, right, because I think a lot of people focus on the Googles of the world, and the Googles of the world are the ones that you should probably focus on the least because they can afford pretty much anything at this point. It's really the mom and pop shops out there who would be affected the most. And, you know, net neutrality comes down to two things. One is on the consumer side, can they block your access to something? And the other is on the business side, can they force small businesses to pay more to get to you?
Could the ruling that we've been talking about here today affect the proposed merger of Comcast and NBC Universal, Amy?
Yeah, you know, it's actually, I would think that it's going to come up during the merger review because, you know, Comcast is one of the biggest providers of Internet service to Americans, and NBC is a huge property, and they're a huge content provider on the Internet. And this is going to be one of those things that I would imagine that groups like Ben are going to be looking at to try to get some kind of conditions on this merger to force Comcast to abide by some net neutrality-like rules.
So before we wrap here today, we have about a minute and a half. I want to ask each of you what you're looking for, what you're watching for the next sort of defining moment or shape of this net neutrality debate. We have had a lot of callers and emailers who are hanging on to this quite closely. It's a hot issue, even if it's somewhat technical at times. Kyle, why don't you start us off? What's next in the net neutrality debate?
Well, I think right now there is a proceeding, a net neutrality proceeding, that was separate from the court case and separate from the broadband plan, I would expect that the FCC is taking a look at the implications of the court case to figure out what they want to do. I think Congress will take a look at it. But I think at the end of the day, we have been well served by a competition policy that has encouraged cable to get into telephone, telephone to get into video, and that's the best means of providing consumers.
Ben, briefly, what's next?
Two things. Number one, the FCC is going to have to set up a new regulatory paradigm to deal with broadband. Net neutrality is going to be one part of that. Two, I think it's going to put the brakes on the Comcast-NBC merger as we try to figure out how the FCC can protect consumers.
You think it's going to put the brakes on the merger?
I think so.
Well, that'll be something to watch, and Amy, that'll give you lots to cover.
Well, yeah, I sort of feel like this is like a football game, right? We're in the second quarter. Everyone's gone to the locker rooms to figure out what to do next. Is Congress going to get involved? Is FCC going to say we have more authority? It just sort of remains to be seen.
And we'll have a good halftime show. Thanks to all of you.
It feels like overtime.
Halftime, overtime. We've got confusion. We can't even agree on that. Ben Scott, Amy Schatz, and Comics Claro, thanks to all of you very much, Dave, for this discussion.
Thanks.
I'm Frank Sesno. You've been listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Have a great day.